You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
Hello and welcome to William Hill's Rugby Union podcast. My name's Michael Casey and we're looking ahead to round four of this year's Six Nations Championship. I'm delighted to say that joining me to preview all three of the weekend's action is former England international prop forward Jeff Probyn. Jeff, getting to the business end of the tournament now. How are you getting on?
Well, we're getting on okay, and you know, this week could go a long way to sorting out who's going to be the champions and who's not. So, very exciting times. Yeah. There's going to be some pretty dull games as well, I have to say.
I think you could well be right. I mean, we'll just reflect on round three quickly. Obviously, there's been the weekend's rest in between, but talking of dull games, one that I guess it was tense, but I thought it was terribly scrappy, was the Wales-France game. 19-10 it ended, and George North almost did everything he could to butcher that try. And
it relied on a bit of luck, didn't it? Police on kicking the ball back into George North's hands, you know. I mean,
obviously don't have own goals in rugby, but I think that's probably as close as it gets to one, isn't it, Jeff?
It probably was, yeah. You know, and yeah, great for George North. He's rebuilding his confidence as a player. He had a dry spell and obviously he suffered a few concussions and been out of the game. But he's back now and he's running around trying to score. So two tries in 2 weeks, he's not doing bad. And, you know, I only hope that he doesn't have that luck this week.
Yeah, that's the big concern, of course. England versus Wales, the feature match, I guess, this weekend. And it will pretty much, you'd imagine, decide who ends up winning the tournament. So we'll dive in and talk about this weekend's games. And we'll start with the first chronologically. Betting-wise, it looks like it should be a dead rubber. It's Ireland versus Italy. It's over in Dublin. Ireland are 1-20 favourites to win against the Azzurri. They draw 33-1. It's 8-1 the Italians. We've got all the team news in for this game. Italy have made four changes to their side. Josh Furno comes in for George Biagi. Eduardo Padovini has replaced Palazzini at scrum half. And also up front, Guillermo Giazon is in for Gori at hooker. Italy, interesting one, aren't they? There's flashes of you know, promise and potential about them, and it just we kind of thought that last week might have been their chance at the Stadio Olimpico to get that win, but in the end they came to a Scotland side that showed bits and pieces at various times in the match. I don't suppose you can see Ireland losing this one, but 23 points handicap, Jeff. How do you call this?
I've got to be honest. I think that that might be a bit low.
Right.
This Italian side is good. It's got some great players in there. You know, Campanario, Bellini, obviously Parisi, the captain. But they're missing one of their key players in Gori. Gori's got injured and he's out of it now. He's got a cracked rib, didn't he, which he got in the Scotland game. And they're missing their talisman hooker now, Girondini, who's been an outstanding player for them in their forwards. They also have lost Castro Giovanni from their bench. He's on a ban at the moment. So this is the Italian side that's suffering from a few injuries, hasn't got the strength in depth, playing against an Irish side who also has lost a few players, let's be honest. Rob Kenny's not playing for a while. They brought Simon Zeebo in. But they've got Gerard Payne back, got Hinshaw back. They've got a little bit more, if you like, continuity going with them in the Irish side. I can see the Irish, particularly playing at home, they've not had a good Six Nations so far, so they'll try and really put on a show. I can see them cracking 30 points.
Well, that Irish team, then, we'll just run through it. The back line, Simon Zeebo at 15, you mentioned he'd replaced Rob Henshaw, who is ruled out of the game. On the wings, have got Andrew Trimble and Keith Earls. Midfield of Jared Payne and Robbie Henshaw. Jonathan Sexton and Conor Murray at 9 and 10. In the front row, Mike Ross, Rory Best, Jack McGrath, Devon Turner and Donica Ryan. In the second row, back row of CJ Stander, Josh DeFlyer and Jamie Heaslip. So it's it is a familiar-sounding side, isn't it? I mean, Josh Van der Flyer obviously made his debut against England, did okay. CJ Stander's probably one of the more positive things about this tournament for Ireland. And elsewhere, even with the players who are coming in, as we mentioned, Simon Zeebo recalled to the side, it is a familiar-looking team. I don't know, against England, whilst they were kind of, I thought, maybe lacked a little bit of a spark going forward, they look quite solid overall. Is that a fair assessment?
I think, you know, the game against England, there were elements in the game that were quite exciting, but as a game of rugby, the actual play was pretty turgid, really. And, you know, you can understand why, because Ireland had suffered so many injuries, had so many changes. I mean, they'd lost so many of their star players, people like Sean O'Brien, you know. They bloodied McCluskey, the young centre, lastly against England. So, all in all, for the Irish, it was a very mixed game, and they kind of slowed England down a bit, it's got to be said. This week, they've got their old players back. Zeebo, although he's not as good a fullback as Rob Kearney, he is a very exciting attacking player. Used to play on the wing, been moved to the fullback role, adds that little bit of extra pace and a little bit of je ne sais quoi, should we say, as an attacking player. I think that, particularly with Gerard Payne coming back in that midfield, that they work better. Henshaw and Payne play well together. Sexton will be up and firing. It's good to see Conor Murray after the injury that he received in that England game where he got the stitches under his eye. But Conor Murray's back in there. They've got a familiarity about that back line, and their forwards are doing okay. You know, Mike Ross there with Jack McGrath and Rory Best is a good front row. They're not going to replace the likes of Paul O'Connor overnight, but Devin Toner has stepped up to the thing and started playing games. CJ Stander is standing in for Sean O'Brien in terms of taking that ball forward and getting there. And Flyer is, as his name says, he is a flyer. He's an open side flanker who gets around the field well. And Heaslip and Parisi will be battling each other. But there's still so much strength in this Irish side that I can't really see this Italian side living with them. I can see them starting off full of energy, full of play, but I just see the Irish side pulling away towards in the late stages of the game, and I think that it'll be a 30-40 pointer on the Irish side.
Well, as I say, the handicap line is set at 23 points. However, we have got alternative handicaps available. You can back as big as 38 points there at 9-2. Ireland minus 33 points is 11-4, minus 28, 8-5. So all odds against prices there. I guess it depends on how brave you want to be about the Irish pulling away from the Italians here. I mean, I guess if you think that Scotland managed to put 36 on them, albeit conceding some points in the process, that could be something to look at. Another market that I'd be interested in, just on the back of what you said there, Jeff, highest scoring half, the second half at 4-7. As you said before, and I think it is fair to say, the Italians are quite often punchy and competitive in games in the early stages, even if they're not necessarily getting that many points on the board. In the second half, could be where we see the Irish really drive home their advantage. Do you think that's a decent play, Jeff? Second half, highest scoring points at 4-7.
I certainly do. I think both teams will start with a hiss and a roar, but it'll be the Irish team that will come good towards the latter stages of the second half and start putting the points on the board. You know, once we get into the substitutes area, the Italians are really scraping the barrel. They're at the bottom of their squad. The Irish are not. You know, they've got Sean Cronin, they've got Healy coming as guys who are going to come on. You know, Ian Madigan, Fergus McFadden, who can play either fullback or winger. So they've got lots of players, and John Schmidt will be very happy with where his team is at the moment. He won't be happy with the results that they've had in his Six Nations, so they're going to want to put a performance on. You know, I do think that. Well, I think, you know, we're going to see some try scoring activity in that game. Certainly,
I think I'd be inclined to agree, and I think it will be going the way of the Greens predominantly. Well, now I've got that out of the way, Jeff, let's talk about England versus Wales. Fingers crossed, it'll be a. I guess we don't really want it to be too competitive, but it should be an entertaining battle. They certainly have been entertaining battles in recent years, not always favourable for England. But the bookies think that it might be this time. England are 1-2 favourites to win the game. Wales 17-10. The handicap is 5 points. We've got all try score markets priced up. The favourite to score for England being Anthony Watson at 9-2, close behind Jack Noll at 5-2. Sorry, 9-4 for Anthony Watson, 5-2 anytime Jack Noll. George North heads the betting for Wales at the same price, 5-2. We do have the try again bet, where if your first try scores second, you get your money back as a free bet. So that is worth bearing in mind. So Jeff, could probably decide the title this one. How do you see it going?
Well, it will decide the title one way or the other. Let's be honest. Yeah. It'll either be that Wales will get it or England will get it. And I think that England will get it. I think that Wales obviously are playing virtually the same team they played in the World Cup. England did get a 10-point advantage in that and threw it away in the dying minutes of the game. They won't do that again. The England side will be a lot more disciplined than they were, certainly in that World Cup game. And they've got the measure of this Welsh side. They've beaten them on a number of occasions. We understand the way the Welsh are going to play. So I'm quite happy in what Eddie Jones has done. He's kept this side together. There was a great temptation to bring Manu Tuilagi straight back in. He's not. He's put him on the bench. What an impact substitute to have from the bench. You know, bring on Danny Kerr, bring on Manu Tuilagi, and suddenly you change the whole dynamic of the game. It's quite an interesting England side.
It is, and it's an unchanged 15 from the side that beat Ireland 21-10 last weekend. You've referenced there a couple of changes on the bench, Manu Tuilagi being the one that grabs the headlines. I think that, you know, upon his return to Premiership action for Leicester, he's just been gone around sorting, trying to take people's heads off. I've seen so many big tackles. I mean, the one that he put a particular hit on Blair Cowan 2 weeks ago against Newcastle Falcons, you know, I felt all the way up in Doncaster watching it on my laptop. It was a thunderous hit. Obviously reading about this game, and obviously a lot of comparisons will be made from the game in the World Cup where Wales were able to turn around the deficit and beat England. How do you think Eddie Jones England can go about winning this game? A lot of talk is about the back row. The Irish side is again, it's unchanged from last week. A few changes on the bench for them, but
the Welsh side.
Dan Lydiot, Sam Warburton, and Toby Fartow, the back row for the Welsh. The English back row: James Haskell, Chris Robshaw, and Billy Vunipola. Whereabouts do you think the game will be won? And whereabouts do you think England will win the game?
I've got to be honest. I think it'll be one slightly more forward than those back rows. Because if you look at the back rows, Warburton, Haskell, roughly the same sort of players. Lydiard and Robshaw, roughly the same sort of players. Billy Vunipola and Toby Fallatau are also roughly the same sort of players. So we've not got out in there. I'm surprised. I would have thought that Warren Gatland would have started with Tipperick to have a true open side. One of the aspects about the England back row is it's a very powerful back row, but it's not particularly quick. And so, you know, instead of what Warren Gatland has done, which is to pick an equally powerful back row, but also not a quick back row, is they've played against each other. If he brought Tipperick in there, it would have brought a little bit more pace, maybe a bit of variety that could have helped the Welsh in that area. But I think, in all honesty, I think it's England's front five that will actually dominate this game. I think certainly the front row, the experience of Marler and obviously Dylan Hartley playing there and Dan Cole against what is a quite young, inexperienced front row as far as Wales are concerned. Yes, Samson Lee has done well. Rob Evans has come in and done well. But they are still relatively inexperienced as international players. Baldwin is the hooker as well. So from that point of view, England do have a marked advantage in terms of their front rows. And if they can use that to dominate that set piece in the lineouts, Wales with Alan Wynne-Jones do have a guy who's very experienced. But with young Mario Toji coming in the side, who is full of energy and robustness is a good way of putting it, he will be a challenge. He'll be a handful. And George Cruz is controlling the England line out very well, so I'm quite happy about England play how they're playing lines. But I think in the scrums, the England will have a slight edge in the front row, and that should give their back row a bit of an advantage.
How confident are you prepared to be on England then? Obviously, on that assessment, the 1-2 looks a bet. Do you think that they can cover the handicap 5 points? It's a one score margin. It's 10-11. Or how? If I was to ask you for a score prediction, Jeff, whereabouts do you think you'd go?
I think I'd go something like 18-10.
18-10, which obviously would fall into the minus five on England. We've got winning margin bets available. England to win by 1-12, which that's a bet I quite like, is 6-4. I fancy the game to be kept tight enough. So England by 1-12 is there at 6-4. Nice odds against price. Just looking down at some of these try scorers, then Anthony Watson's had a pretty strong tournament. He's 9-4, heads the betting to score on Saturday at Twickenham. Jack Norris said 5-2. I mean, elsewhere, we've seen quite a few of the forwards get close to the line. Obviously, early in the tournament, yeah. George Cruz, he's an unlikely choice, but at 11-1 could be one to look at. I mean,
well, Mike Brown's got to be someone to look at, hasn't he, as well?
Mike Brown, 3-1 in the betting. Interestingly, Manu Tuilagi, who, as we know, is a thunderous ball carrier and will probably break tackles, but more often not break them and then look to offload at these guys outside, is in the betting at 3-1. I think that's maybe priced up on name and reputation more than actual try scoring stats.
You have to remember there is a famous incident where Manu Tuilagi did make a break for a tackle against, I think it was against Wales a couple of years ago at Twickenham, where he started to run from his own 22, didn't have the pace to finish the game and got tackled just before the try line.
You'd be upset, wouldn't you, if you had your money there on the 3-1? I mean, Mike Brown probably wouldn't have got caught, would he?
Even when Mike Brown would not have got caught. You know, he's got a lot more pace. So I think if Tuilagi comes on, you know, you could say as an any-time try scorer, he'd be there. But I think you're looking at guys who are starting. You know, Dylan Hartley almost scored a try last week, playing off the back of those mauls and that. Mm. And if England get their driving maul right, which is something they haven't done in the previous games, but there is an opportunity for some of the forwards to score tries, and it would be the likes of Hartley who would be the guy who picks up a try. So he could be an any-time try scorer from a driving maul.
8-1 for the England captain to get over the whitewash. We'll move on to the final game of the weekend, Scotland versus France. It's at Murrayfield, and it's closed up. It's priced up pretty closely, if we're being completely honest. It's the closest of the weekend's games in the bookies' eyes. Scotland at 5-6, France even money, minus a point on Scotland as favourites.
I think the bookies are going mad.
Oh, wow. Well, let's see why then. I'm keen on France this weekend then.
I think France, yeah. Reality is the game against Wales could have gone either way. Wales are certainly markedly better than Scotland. That would mean that logic says that France are actually better than Scotland. France have got far more powerful players than the Scottish have. The Scottish forwards are doing reasonably well, but they find it difficult to live with power play. They did in the game against England, and certainly the French forwards are very, very, very powerful. And they will squeeze Scotland very, very hard. Laidlaw's goal kicking is good. It'd be interesting to see whether the French pick Trent start the game, because of the way he came on the field and produced the sort of game where he got his backs moving a lot more. If they get that sort of play going against the Scots, then you can see the Scots losing this by between 10 and 15 points.
It wouldn't be a Six Nations podcast with William Hill if we agreed on everything, Jeff. So I'm going to go the other way. I think that Scotland are worthy favourites. I'm not saying I'd, you know, part with a lot of my hard earned on the 5-6 and maybe looking somewhere else in some of the markets we have available. But I don't know. There's something I like about the makeup in this Scottish side. I do think they've got a more settled halfback pairing than the French. Not particularly hard. It's the French and it's halfbacks. But I agree with maybe some of the issues that there's certainly less power in areas in the Scottish forwards. I think certainly in the back row, you know, up against the likes of Louis Picamoz, the likes of maybe David Denton, perhaps just fall short. And we are still waiting on team news here. But I've been impressed with certain players out wide. I mean, Tommy Seymour, I think, has had another good tournament. Finn Russell, again, has looked good. I know there's no Matt Scott for the rest of the tournament now. He's ruled out through injury. But no, I think we're taking each other on here, Jeff. But
Vatatwawa is there.
Vatatwawa, yeah. The seventh specialist, obviously scored on debut in this tournament.
And a very powerful player. Camara, who's come into the side as well. He's a very powerful player. Madard playing well at fullback. You know, if you suddenly look at that back three for the French, if they get they cut loose, if they get that forward power working and they cut loose, they will score tries. I mean, the French have shown flashes. They haven't consistently played well in this championship, but they have shown flashes. And going to Murrayfield won't faze the French. It's not like it's a fortress, Murrayfield. So I honestly can't see Scotland being strong enough to beat them.
Okay, then let's have a look at the bets then. I mean, handicap betting, as I mentioned, Scotland slight favourites by a single point. But you could have France, I don't know, maybe minus 9 points, 9-2 in the betting, big price there. Minus 4 points, 15-8. Is that the sort of area you'd be looking at playing a handicap bet, Jeff?
I certainly would. I'd be looking for that 9-2 bet.
Very good. A winning margin live available as well. I mean, you could take France by 13 or more points if you fancy it at 11-2, which is a very generous price indeed. I guess we talk normally at the end of the recordings about whether or not we think there'll be a Grand Slam. I guess, whilst you don't want to tempt fate, and round five away in France could always be a banana skin, but if England are to be successful, as you're predicting this weekend, Jeff, we could see a first English Grand Slam for an awful long time.
Well, it would be, you know, and there is a potential for this team to do it. The problem is for us, when we are all looking at this, is we're watching this, if you like, this Six Nations, and seeing teams evolve. This is not stable teams that people recognise that have been there for a number of years. These are all teams with new players in that are developing, that are not playing their best rugby. And this tournament hasn't been particularly good, it has to be said, in terms of the rugby that's been played. So it seems against the odds, against the principles, that a team can go out and win a Grand Slam when they're still developing. And it says a lot about where all the countries are in terms of their redevelopment. England could go and win this Grand Slam. They could, if they'll beat Wales, I believe they'll beat Wales, they could beat France in France. It will be a very tough match for them, but they can beat France because they're the only team that can match France up front in terms of their forward power.
Last time England won a Grand Slam, 2003, a particularly good year for English rugby.
Yeah, I remember it as well. Something else went on there as well. I can't remember.
Yeah, it'll come to me, Jeff.
Yeah, something about a drop goal, if I remember correctly.
That sounds about right.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.